Welcome, beautiful.
Thank you.
Welcome. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm very, very happy to be in Germany.
Are you?
Yes.
Okay.
I really love it.
I mean,
it
in winter,
here.
It's kind of a get.
But I like the winter months. I like Christmas. And obviously, you guys do like Christmas markets, the best. And it's nice to see German fans because it's been a very long time since I've like seen you guys. And maybe some new fans now. So that's pretty cool too.
Yeah, I was just saying how it doesn't happen very often these days that you get to physically be in such like an intimate moment with the artists that you love.
Yes.
And you as well with the people that you love.
Yeah, it's true. And as an artist, that's one of the best parts is doing things like this and having like intimate
gatherings.
yes. Yeah. So yeah, very happy to be here.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much that we have to talk about. There's a lot that happened. And I feel like, especially for these people, it didn't pass them by. Mm-hmm. And it's an incredible craft that you've mastered over the years. And you as an artist, it's just like you kind of encapsulate this like dark feminine energy that is so addictive. And also your music, girl.
Thank
we need
you
to talk
much.
About it. I'm kind of going to go back to little Jade.
Yes.
And I'm really interested how that kind of journey went for you, because I was thinking about the X Factor time.
Yeah.
And I was like, after I would get rejected like once, I would die and never come back. And you came back two more times.
I did, yes. I think rejection, once you look at it differently, like rejection is just putting you on like the right path to where you're meant to be. So you know, especially when I was younger, I obviously struggled with it. But I did a lot of auditions, like as a performer. Mm-hmm. I'd audition for like Annie the Musical. And then,
my favorite one.
Right, but I never got the part. It's fine. I'm not bitter about it at all.
You should have dyed your hair.
I know, right? So yeah, I guess I was kind of used to rejection from a young age. But the first time I did X Factor, I was really embarrassing, because when you do that show and if they like you and they want to make a thing of you, they sent like the whole TV crew to my school, and I had to film like an assembly and get on stage and be like, I've made it. I've got the X Factor. And I was like, woo!
Oh my God. Your teacher was like, girl, get back to math.
Yeah. And then I went to boot camp and I didn't get through, and I had to come back home and be like, guys, sorry. It was,
it lasted
5 minutes. It was so embarrassing. So that was the worst one, actually, as like a 15-year-old girl, just like, oh my God, that's so awful.
Yeah.
But I think because I knew more than anything, I wanted to be a singer, or I wanted something more than like the position I was in at that time. So I do think I would have just kept going back until let me win.
Yeah. No, but I love that energy, because it's such a, you know, rejection is a very big theme for music artists. I feel like people don't know that.
Yeah.
It's like you look at an artist and you just listen to their album and it's like, woo, fun. But behind that, the years of rejection from like labels and A&Rs, and maybe just people and haters and everything. I feel like, especially like you were so young, and your view of rejection being like, I'm just going to try again and I'm not going to let myself.
Yeah. And like the thing is, and you should all feel like this in whatever you do, if you know you're good at something, then who cares what someone else thinks about it? Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So I think when, especially in the public eye, it is a lot, because you are constantly rejected in terms of like people telling you you're not good enough, or they don't like your music, or they would have done this differently. And then, yeah, like you say, behind the scenes, you know, there might be people that don't believe in you, or you're getting no's left, right and center. But maybe I have just grown a thick skin from doing this for so long, but I'm like, I give myself my flowers every day. I don't need them from somebody else.
Amen.
So, and I really hope that you guys can like feel that way too in whatever you do, because yeah, that's so important to do. And the minute that sort of switch happened for me, I'm like, you know, I work really hard. I know I can do this. Then, you know, you can't please everyone either. That's just the reality. You're not going to get a yes from everyone in life, and you shouldn't. You have to learn what rejection is. You have to learn to say no to people and receive a no. So yeah, I think it's actually quite healthy.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like artists tend to be more in that kind of realm of I'm going to do whatever I want because we're crazy enough, like, because we're doing, we're like singing and making music and writing about soup, like things that no one should actually know that's going on in our heads.
Yes.
But I feel like for you guys, it's such a huge message to have an artist that kind of portrays that image that you can just literally do whatever the fuck you want. And if someone says no, it's probably an old man and you shouldn't.
Yes.
Usually with me. And you know, I don't know, it's really nice. It's refreshing. It's very refreshing.
I think, you know, I've over the years I've gotten better at it. Don't get me wrong, like when we first started in the group and we were scared of those kinds of people, like heads of labels or, you know, the men in the high chairs like telling you what they think, and you're sat there as someone that is the right demographic that listens to your own music.
Yeah.
I think your opinion is, you know, maybe more valid at times, but you know, you do have to listen sometimes. But I think, as the years went by, especially for me and the girls, the more of a voice we had, it was interesting to see the kind of wall we were met with, the more we'd pipe up about things.
I get what you mean.
Yeah, and that's telling in itself. So,
Yeah, I know what you mean. But especially, I feel like music is also a very subjective thing. It's art. And
yes,
sometimes it's a concept that has to be there in order for, I feel like, the industry to work. You know, you have to have parts that just belong to the business side of it. Yeah. But also, how are you... You shouldn't ever be like, okay, people don't like the song that I make. Is like, it's impossible for music to be bad.
Yeah.
It's just you think it's bad, or you think it's fire or whatever. So
it's all opinion, isn't it? So someone says to me like, oh, your song's really shit, I'm like, well, to you it is.
That's you. You do
to
you.
Somebody is. It's to somebody else it's brilliant. So I don't know. I think now more than ever as well, like in terms of music and what does and doesn't do well, I think nobody actually really knows what a hit song is anymore. You can't determine it. If it's going to pop off, it's going to pop off. If it isn't, you're better off creating music that you love, that is true to who you are as an artist. And then whatever happens, whatever the success of that song is, then you can hold your head high, do you know what I mean? And have that pride in what you've created, so...
Yeah. 1,000%. How did talking about that kind of evolution that you had with yourself as well, how did you create that safe environment for yourself to be able to go, okay, now I'm by myself and now I can do whatever I want? Because a lot of freedom can also be really scary, because then there's no limit. You can do whatever you want. And then how did you decide what's right for you? How do I want to make my music? With who do I want to make my music?
I mean, it was a very scary process in the beginning, just because the girls were like my comfort blanket, and we were in like a...
I just imagine you guys just like...
we were joined at the hip, like we wouldn't go anywhere without each other. So to kind of get used to being without them was really tough. And then in a sort of creative space, I had to kind of relearn how to write music for like a solo artist, for myself. Writing maybe not as like generically anymore, because when you're writing for a group you have to write something you all relate to or that will apply to like the masses, whereas now I get to write just, you know, based on my experiences, which is cool. But yeah, the first thing I did was I got in the studio with Emenike. We're very good friends, and bless him, he was like the first person when we first started talking about like going on a break. He was like, let's just get in the studio. We can spend months, however long you want, just writing music and just see what your sound is or what you feel like works for you. So I was really lucky actually to have a friend like that who is also a musical genius. He's so talented. So to have him be there for me in that moment was really special. And because of that, and because of other writers around me, like Lauren Aquilina, she's an incredible songwriter and artist. You should check her out. Lost Boys, they're the two people that I wrote Cut You Off with, actually. Mm. So I've done a few things with them for my own album. I wrote enough music to then take to labels and be like, this is my sound. do you want me?
Do you want me?
Yeah, but that was important, I think. I didn't want to turn up to labels and have them tell me, like, what they think I should be or how they think it should go.
You that started was, off on a different base. You kind
yeah,
of did
yeah.
what you wanted. You also, wasn't that nice you had the time? Like, you were
yes.
just, because no one knew about it,
no,
probably.
No, I was very under the radar, and I think... A lot of my fans thought I was like just now a TikTok
done.
Influencer.
TikTok influencer.
Yeah, they're like, it's over.
Like, I'm cooking.
Yeah, because I didn't want to tell anyone yet what I was doing because I knew it might take a couple of years.
And you don't want to get hopes up and then there's a timing and you just want to be creative. And
yeah, so it. I definitely didn't show any of my sort of studio process for a long time. So it was just me on TikTok for a while, like being like, hey,
all
it's me
there.
Again. Yeah, just trying to sort of, I guess, still keep people entertained a little bit. But you know, I think if the music's good enough and if you have the kind of fandom that I have and that we had as a group, you know, they'll wait and they'll know it's worth the wait. So I was very grateful for that. Yeah, so I signed and then kept writing, kept traveling back and forth to LA looking for like the first song.
LA.
Yes.
Interesting.
LA is scary. It
I was
still
gonna say,
scares
I was like,
me, actually.
Bro, it's the energy there. I've talked about this with a bunch of artists because it's some artists love it,
yeah.
but I feel like they've just been brainwashed.
Maybe.
You were just
I
there
know.
For too long.
I do like LA. I like going for a couple of months, then I like coming back home and like grounding myself again yeah. because... LA is a little bit like what you see where it's like, woo, everyone just start. Do you know what I mean? So like when I go there, it's very, you very quickly get big headed. but it is lovely that when you go on like sessions a lot of the time, everyone's like, this is the best thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's and nice because like, there's no cap in LA. Like there's no ceiling to anything.
No, there
and
isn't.
It makes you kind of be able to dream as well.
Yeah.
In Germany, it's don't even ask.
Is it? I don't know.
There is a cap and there is a roof.
Maybe. I mean, I can't speak for over. Yeah, but yeah, LA is like, but it is, it's such a big like pool of people and everyone is trying desperately to make it. So, and I knew that would happen just because Little Mix was so huge didn't mean that it was going to be an easy ticket on my own. So I still had to like do meetings and coffees with certain people and be like, here's some of my music. Do you want to work together? Sometimes it was a yes. Sometimes it was, you know, a no. And I've, all that time I was like, I remember you telling me no. So, because that's something as well that I'm really passionate about is like, we all start somewhere, right? So, you know, Max Martin wasn't always Max Martin. He also waited for his big break at some point. So I always like working with people who, yes, I have like the big guns like Circuit and people like that, but also I love working with people that are maybe more up and coming, not just from the music, but like visuals, like any sort of creative. I think it's important to work with people that need that chance or that opportunity because I needed that too when I first started. And yeah, just on the sort of fickleness of the industry, like with Mike Sabbath, I've known him since we wrote Wasabi together, which was like, God, like 8 years ago, Justice for Wasabi still.
He's an OG.
Yeah. And so I knew we'd work together really well, but there were a few people around me that were like, well, you know, he's not really got a hit right now. He's not really popping off. I don't think, you know, it's the right match. And then he brought out Escapism with Ray. And then everyone was like, you need to get in with Mike Sabbath. And I was like, I know. So
you've been knowing.
Yeah. So there's things like that that are kind of annoying about the industry.
Yeah, it's almost like you have to buy yourself in with something, not money,
yeah.
but you have to lay something on the table to be able to have the right to be somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think, but it's also, I wouldn't even say humbling, but after, you know, it's like you had the indie artist life for like a couple of months, even though you were in a room with like really huge people as well and stuff, but like having to show your music to people and getting knows and stuff, I feel like it's a great way, like you said, so much personal growth in this too.
Oh yeah, massively.
And I was very curious to ask, because it's very different for every artist, what does a studio session look like for you? Like, I'm talking lights, food,
everything,
you sitting,
the whole
like,
shebang.
The details.
Do you want to know? Okay.
I want to know.
Well, it does depend, like, on what session it is, but I never eat before I go to session because I just know there'll be an awkward point where you need a pause and then you'd be like, hey, should we eat?
So awkward, yeah.
Yeah, it's really awkward. And especially if it's not going very well, you need an excuse to like do something else and write something. But if it's a good session, usually I'll go in with an idea already, like whether that's a poem that I've written. A lot of the songs on the album started with poetry.
Amazing. Do you have a history of poetry as a child, or did you just get into it?
Like, I think I've always liked writing poetry. But again, I guess in the group, it was hard to show that because it's so personal. Yeah, sometimes I'd bring poems into the session or just like concepts and ideas or references of music I'd been listening to recently that I'd want to sort of be inspired by, whether that's like with chords or certain instruments or sounds. Yeah, we get going. Sometimes producers will want to work totally from scratch, or they'll already have like existing beats and whatever, so you listen through a few and you're like, I like this. So yeah, it really just depends. I try to always turn up to the session even if I'm feeling a bit poo, because sometimes you'll write a great song because you feel like shit.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, even like with Angel, I was in a really bad mood that morning. I'd literally had like a mini panic attack because I rang my boyfriend and I was like crying down the phone because the head of my label had just left and I was panicking like, oh God, what if this new person doesn't understand me as an artist? And then I think that's the worst thing. If you're a signed artist and whoever's running it doesn't necessarily care about what you do, that's almost worse than like not being signed at all.
Yeah, it's important to have a personal relationship as
well.
You like
have
with the music
to.
Industry, you're kind of friends with everyone that you work with, or at least, you know,
they
try to really know you.
Exactly. You have to have a team around you that genuinely are passionate about it. So I was really freaking out about that and just how fickle the music industry was. I was definitely having like writer's block, running out of things to write about. I'd done so many like sessions in LA with new people, so my energy was just drained. Yeah. I was like, I've got nothing left. So I don't know what else I can write about. Yeah. So then I went in the studio and like, I guess I am going to write about how I hate this industry. And that's kind of where the starting point was for Angels of My Dreams, because I was explaining to Pablo and Steph and Mike, who I did the song with, just how I'm like so in love with music. And there's so many parts of this job that I adore. But I feel like I'm in this really toxic relationship where I'm like constantly craving its attention. And sometimes it loves me, sometimes it hates me. And I feel like that too.
It's like you don't really have control over it. It's scary.
And then, yeah, the puppet on the string thing. I always loved that song anyways, and I'd saved it for the right moment. I think that was a term that was always used to describe us as well in the industry, was that we were puppets. And I really resented that phrase. So that's kind of where that came from too. And yeah, Angel of My Dreams was the starting point, I think, for being like, okay, this is my sound. This is who I am.
That's where it clicked. That was the moment.
Yeah.
Sonically, would you say like...
And I just knew because it's really hard, I think, when you get in a session with like huge producers or other huge writers, because, you know, it's their job. They want to get a hit. So everyone's trying to get that sort of, not a safe song, but a song that they know might do well or get streams or be good on radio. Whereas when you go in the room with like Mike Sabbath, he's like this mad scientist and he just wants to piece together just anything you want to do. Like there's no limits, there's no like restrictions on what you should write. So with Angel, it started off as like the ballad version actually, and then we added in the drums. It sounded a bit more like a Motown-esque song, and then I was like, can we change the tempo and like, you know, make people feel like they've, I don't know, like they're in the Back to the Future car and they've been like sped into the future. So that's kind of how that began, and that's why the Angel of My Dreams is so chaotic, because we just had so much fun playing around with it.
That is the nicest energy though, to have your inner child just playing. It's like
it's
a
so
very playful
fun.
Energy.
So fun. And at the end of the session, we played it back and I looked at Mike and we were just like, that's it. That's the song.
Yeah. Let's listen to it. I feel like we should, for the vibes.
Oh, okay. Angel of my dreams, I will always love you, hate you, it's not fair.
Oh my God, I levitated.
Thank you.
It's a very ballsy choice to put different tempos in one song.
Yeah.
And I love that creative choice. It's Thank you. Rare these days.
Yeah, I love it. It's just, it feels like it was the perfect introduction to like the Jade world. I think I do have a very sort of scatty, like chaotic brain, and when I'm in a session, I am very much like, can we do this? Can we change that? Can we, you know? So I wanted this song to reflect that. And I love musicals as well. So I literally wanted it to feel like this like whole musical in a pop song with like three different acts to it.
You did that.
Thank you. So yeah, I'm very, very proud of that song. And the response has just been, I mean, even more than I thought it would be. I was definitely more prepared for like a super Marmite response where you'd either love it or hate it. So to have seen like all these amazing reviews, or by no means am I like Billie Eilish or like Sabrina Carpenter level yet on my own. But to see my song amongst those people is like great artistry. Is really
you
special.
You deserve to be there.
Oh, thank you.
You do. You're also an insane like vocal powerhouse. I've been watching a bunch of like, we just talked about her, like Ray and like
yes.
Christina Aguilera. And I watched Christina Aguilera perform with Sabrina.
Oh,
and
me
then
too.
I'm obsessed. It's incredible. The blondes are just.
The blondes are blonding.
Yes. But to me, in my head, you belong to those like vocal powerhouse artists.
Really?
That just,
oh,
because it's like the technique and the like incredible like the things that you can do with your voice.
Thank you.
It's yeah, it doesn't really compare to a lot of artists. And
oh, wow.
I'm very curious to see how your journey was with your voice as well. Did you, when you were a child, like going all the way back, could you always sing? Did you just like come out of the womb like that?
Oh my gosh, maybe. I always loved to sing. It was just weird because like no one else in my like immediate family sings. But I grew up watching a lot of Diana Ross videos. I mean, a lot of you are probably too young to know who that
is. She's an icon.
But she's an absolute icon. The OG pop star to me anyways. And she came from a girl band, The Supremes. So I literally learned how to sing through listening to her music. So that was kind of the starting point, I think. But yeah, I was always drawn to like musicals, and I loved pop music at a very early age. I didn't do that many like sort of singing lessons, but I joined in all the sort of like amateur production things in my hometown. Any sort of musical I would audition for, I'd sing at school, I'd join every choir. So yeah, and then from the age of like 13, 14, I started doing my own gigs. So I would like busk, or I would perform at like old people's homes and pubs and anywhere that would have me. I
put
would
yourself
perform.
Out there.
Yeah,
like
I would gig and gig. Yeah, I mean, what's so weird is I actually was like crippled with like stage nerves, but well, my family used to call me Little Voice because there was a movie, I don't know if it reached over here, but in the UK there was a movie called Little Voice, and it was about this really shy young girl, but when she'd get on stage she'd like become this huge singer. So that was kind of my nickname. But I think for me it was like an escape, it was a release. So I really always tried to push through that. But you know, any sort of videos you see of me when I was little singing, my legs are like like a little lamb on stage, because I loved music so much. I didn't want to be like destroyed by my own head and my own nerves. So you know, that's why the best thing that could have happened to me was being put in a band, because they really helped me with that. But I still get super nervous now, actually. But again, it's just I can't allow that to win. Coming out of the group, I suddenly was like, I've actually not sang a whole song on my own for like 12 years. So, you know, you get used to doing like a verse, some harmonies, the ad-libs at the end. So when I first got in the studio, I was like, oh shit, I've got to sing the whole fucking song. And that was actually a bit of a challenge, which sounds so silly. I'm sure any other solo artist would be like, what? That's so normal.
You're just trained differently.
Yeah, like, I was trained to be like, that's your verse, that's your time to breathe. And you do a little dance break, gather your breath again, and then, you know, go for it at the end. So that was interesting. But yeah, I guess I do pride myself on like technique, and breath work is obviously very important as a singer. And Little Mix was the best training camp for that, because we'd be, you know, we'd be in rehearsals running around the room and singing at the same time, and our choreography was so full on. So I really had to learn how to sing and dance at the same time and be able to push your vocals so you can still belt out these big notes after you've danced around the stage for ages. So yeah,
you're prepped now, you're ready to go.
I guess so. But yeah, I've surprised myself with this solo stuff, and it's just been interesting to see, like when I did the slow version of Angel, or I performed at the Rolling Stone Awards last week, and people being like, oh my god, she's a great singer. I'm like, oh, I don't know, it just feels really weird. I don't know, I'm still getting used to it, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, you're being heard just fully by yourself now. It must be like, yeah, it's just a different concept.
It's,
and I think
so different.
It's gonna take time to get used to, but it's,
yeah,
I feel like the best things are really uncomfortable in the beginning. And then,
absolutely.
You know? Mm-hmm. You guys wrote down a couple of questions.
Yay! Okay. Oh, we'll try and get through as many as we can.
Yes.
And I'll try not to waffle on, because I've...
How are you planning on incorporating more Arabic into your music?
Well, I think it's a gradual thing. I want to do it in the right way and in sort of authentic way. So I guess I've been experimenting with my voice placement, like riffing Arabic riffs, or listening listening to like Arabic artists. I'd love to collaborate with some. Lana Lubinese, amazing. Eliana. So I guess that's like the right way to do it. But that's been really special for me too. Now I'm on my own, is really getting to delve into my heritage more and reflect that in a way that feels, you know, true to me. So that's been really cool. And having the chance to do that, like I did Radio 1 Live Lounge, where I got to do my own sort of Arabic version of a cover. But I'm definitely still learning. I don't think it would be the right thing to just come out and be like, and now I have an Arabic album. Do you know what I mean? You've got to build yourself up to that and do it in a respectful way as well.
I mean, it's nice because you get to probably melt together these different worlds, and especially melting together like Arabic with pop.
Yes.
And I feel like it could be a really fun journey, and also you discovering even more nuances to your sound.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I'm really excited.
It's cool to always be learning something new, and it's been really cool. Like, it reminds me of my childhood as well, like with my granddad and the music he would play. For a long time, I sort of forgot about that whilst I was, you know, on a different journey. So it's nice to go back to that.
Also, curious to see how like visually that's gonna look like,
because
I feel like you're also just with your project that are out right now, visually you associate your songs with concepts, music video concepts, especially Angel of My Dreams. I felt like there was some like very like childhood nuances in there, you know, like
there is
autobiographical things that you put in there.
I think so. I think like Little Jade is a concept that I carry throughout this album. I'd say the sort of main themes of this record are like being in the spotlight and what that means for me. Kind of finding myself again, rediscovering Little Jade and what she wants to hear. I'd say it's quite an empowering album because it's confronting all of the things I've maybe struggled with, but overcome. That's really cool. And I'm a very visual artist, so I always see like videos or how I want the campaign to look. And this right now is obviously the main pop girl era. So that's what this album is this time around, like, you know, big pop music, which we like to think we all love. So, yeah.
I just said when I listen to music, I really want to just pull up to like a drag queen concert.
Great.
Like, yeah, really, that's just what I immediately feel.
That's the best compliment you could ever give me.
Yes, but you're also like, you're an ally, you're certified, like you're in it, because you've been a guest judge at RuPaul's.
Yes,
which is like, you did it.
Yeah.
You're officially in.
I guess so, yeah.
What's that connection for you like, and how has it flourished? And
what, just allyship in general?
Yeah, especially with drag as well.
With drag culture.
Start?
I mean, it's interesting because I think drag culture has actually always been a part of my life without even realizing. When I was younger, I'd go to a lot of drag shows. So from an early age, I was definitely drawn to this idea of like having an alter ego and you know, the glamour of all these big divas with huge hair and sequins and feather boas. Like, as a child, I was like, that's the doll I want. Why can't I have that as a doll? So that was always something, I guess, that was like there. But I think so many artists now, past and present actually, are heavily influenced by drag culture, whether they realize it or not. Whether that's from the beauty looks we do, you know, the queens did it first is what I would say. But yeah, in terms of allyship, I think when I got put in the band and I moved to London, that was definitely a turning point, because it was a lot of my friends from that community that sort of took me in, helped me make London home, because I was very lonely. So I actually don't know what I would have done without my sort of LGBT plus friends at that time.
The gays are the best.
They are. They
really are.
They actually, yeah, they've genuinely made me who I am. And they're my chosen family. So in London. So that's really important. And I guess, yeah, in the band, it became very apparent that we had quite a large LGBTQ plus following. So it felt wrong for me to just sort of benefit from that and not actually do something to show my support. Whether that was, you know, working with Stonewall or just learning more of the history, and, you know, going to the right marches, signing the right petitions. It's weird, because when I get like awarded or praised for being an ally, it feels really strange to me, because it's just like it doesn't take much to do. I don't know. It's just the easiest award ever. Yeah, thank you. So yeah, it really doesn't take much to just do the right thing. But you know, lovely nonetheless to be given that title, I guess. And I'll always strive to do better. You know, I've definitely slipped up in the past. I might have said the wrong thing, or you know, got the wrong idea about swimming. And that's another thing as well, is like, you know, taking accountability for those sort of things and learning from that and keeping it moving. So yeah, that the community is so important to me and always will be.
Last question to drag, because I really want to know. I'm sorry, I want to know who your favorite drag queen is at the moment.
So impossible.
It's a really mean question. I feel bad.
But. Well, it's hard because I've got so many friends now that are drag queens. If I say someone, they'll be like, "Why didn't you say me?"
Just go like top three. Maybe?
Oh my gosh! I mean, right now, because I've just watched Drag Race UK. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but it's so good. It's one of the best seasons. I feel like the UK Drag Race is always like one of the best ones. Just saying. Because they just do it so well. It's like the personality, the looks. So Lavoie on this season, I absolutely adored, because she really reminded me of the queens that I used to go and watch as a little girl. So there was definitely nostalgia there, but she's like an all-rounded, phenomenal drag queen. She's funny, she looks stunning, she stands for something. And to be fair, I thought the top five drag queens on this year's Drag Race UK were all very worthy of being there, all incredible queens. Love Lil, but I love like Shea Coulee. I could talk about this forever. I'm gonna keep it short. Shea Coulee, I'm really good friends with Willem, who is so lovely. Courtney Act, Alaska. God, the list's endless. Taste, Bimini, Ahura. I don't know.
Lineup is crazy.
We love the queens. We love them. Yeah.
Very good. I love it. Horror film influences that you've talked about in the past. I really want to know about that, because I feel a super green flag if a human likes horror films.
It's a green flag.
Because it shows, first of all,
you
have balls.
That I'm crazy.
Yeah, no, but you appreciate the culture like of horror films, you know? It's just a lot deeper than just being scary, I feel like.
I think so. I actually think, hot take, I don't know if this is the right one, but I think there's a lot of feministic like qualities to a lot of horror movies, especially
except
recently. Pardon?
Except for Scary Movie.
Except for Scary Movie. Sorry, yeah, definitely not
I was
that
like,
one.
I
that
hate
was
that.
Really of its time. Yeah. So silly. I have actually referenced it a tiny bit in my new video that I'm shooting this week. interestingly. Exclusive! I love horrors. But yeah, the most recent ones, like, you know, The Substance, what's the Zoe Kravitz one? The name's just gone out of my head. Yes, Blink Twice. There's a new one as well that I just watched with James McAvoy.
Did you watch Long Legs?
I haven't watched it yet. Is it good?
I love the colors and the way it's done.
Yes.
But I would say that I'm not going to spoil it for anyone.
Don't sweat it, because I'm going to watch it.
But sometimes the endings are just like...
Oh, I know, there's nothing worse.
You know when it moves into like a fantasy direction, you're like, but yeah. I was scared because it was so realistic, I think.
Oh, okay.
But right. But it's still really good, like the quality is just a good
Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch that one. There's been loads of good ones this year, but yeah, I've forgotten the name of the James McAvoy one. But I really enjoyed that because the mother in the horror movie is like the hero. She saves the day. And I think it's really cool because we're seeing less of like the girlies that are like, oh! You know what I mean? Like in Scream, which is obviously iconic. And I think there's also like a campness to a lot of horror movies. Like they're kind of fab as well. Like Substance is, you know, gay rights to me. And so it's like obviously Rocky Horror Picture Show, you know, the old school, like brilliant horror. Well, yeah, I guess that is a horror movie. There's like a bit of a fabulousness to them, which I also enjoy. So I take a lot of inspiration from horror as a genre. And I think you can kind of see that running thread through a lot of my visuals, like Angel. Even Midnight had that scary element of these paparazzi that were like coming right up to the camera. And then the most obvious one is the fantasy video with the Carrie reference.
I did not expect that. I was like, ooh.
Again, okay. Like how camp. If you watch Carrie,
yeah.
The way they wait like 10 minutes for that bucket of blood to land and are like, we all know it's there and it's so long. Like it's in slow motion. Everyone's like, it's like, Bab, just put it on her. We know it's coming. And then it lands on her and she's like, it's so dramatic. I live for it. I was very excited to reference that for the fantasy video. And you know, Dave LaChapelle is so iconic. He's done some of the best music videos of all time, one of the best photographers in the world. So to get to work with him was like a pinch me moment, and we got on really well, and I knew the video was going to be really beautiful and that it was going to be like a beauty look. It was going to be about the glamour, which I thought was a good sort of contrast to the Angel video, but we definitely wanted to pepper in some of that like darkness and give people this sort of shock factor again.
It's fun because like music videos, I feel like they are appreciated by the right people for sure, but people are scared to really make them, even if you're a smart, like small artist, because back in the days, I feel like when a music video came out, I was like, oh my God, like I'm going to spend all week watching it. I'm going to clear my calendar to watch this. Yeah. And now, because things are like, there's just so much, and I'm sure you've talked about this a million times, but because there's so much on social media, music videos tend to go under the radar. People like skip through them or do like the times two, and they're like, bro, no, where's your...
hurts my soul, yeah.
So I love that your music videos are really like, short movie that I'm watching.
I think, yeah, I guess, yeah.
And I want to stay. Like, I want to enjoy.
Thank you.
You know?
We're so used to, you know, seeing things quickly, or we get bored easily, or we have that swipe culture now on social media. So it's really hard to draw attention. And I know there's artists that have, like, stopped doing music videos, or it's hard to get budgets for music videos now just because that's the world we're in. Yeah. And I just can't imagine... like pop music without music videos, like,
right, because you associate what? That too visual, like it's a moment,
you have to, especially as a pop artist, you're a visual artist, like it all comes hand in hand. You want to show the world what you mean. Sometimes a music video can help a song because it shows people what the lyrics mean, or it tells the story, or you know, that some music videos have made a song a hit. So the idea that they're not as important is really sad to me. And, you know, that's my pastime. It's my favourite thing to do, is to sit on my sofa with my friends and watch music videos. Yeah, I mean, every week without fail, I'll watch whatever's just come out. I'll watch my old favourite music videos.
Sometimes I'll just
watch... I mean, I watch a lot of the Normani ones. I mean, I see a lot of them. There's not a lot of them. But Wildside, obviously, Motivation, incredible. Like, one of the best videos in the last 10 years, I would say. But I watch like, oh God, I mean, the list is endless and my mind's gone blank.
Yeah, I know, I
but even
that.
Like the old school ones like Aha and like the Take On Me video, I always was super inspired by.
What do you think about the Scooter remix? You also just mentioned that.
What do I think?
Remixes are, not even what do you think, but maybe like remixes are very special and also giving your baby, it's
yes.
a song, to someone be like, make it different but also really good is
Scooter
scary.
Remix is, it's iconic actually. I grew up listening to Scooter music, dance classics, Scooter, Logical Song, jumping all over the world. You know, I knew all of those. I saw him live in Newcastle when I was like a teenager. So I knew the minute Angel was finished that I wanted a Scooter remix. Because again, I like surprising people. Every remix that I do, again, is like super thought out. I don't just like, the label don't just come to me and go, this person's quite a big deal, do you want them on? Do you know what I mean? It's like, I want to know who they are. I want to know that I like them. I want to approve the remix myself. So Scooter was definitely up there as one of the main ones. And then Fantasy, we've just brought out an Alex Chapman remix. And yeah, I went to his like DJ night recently and he played out my music for me, and he's such a sweet person and a brilliant, brilliant DJ. So that Fantasy remix is actually one of my favourites out of all of them. I don't know if you've heard it yet, but it's really good. You should listen to it.
Which song by any other artist do you wish you could have written yourself?
I love Diet Pepsi.
Oh,
it's a brilliant 10 out of 10 pop song
for
me. No One Dies From Love by Tovelo.
Oh my God, I love that one.
When I heard that song, I was like, oh, I wish I'd wrote that. And the video is amazing as well. She's a great artist. We wrote a song together on my album, actually.
Ooh.
Yes. So, yeah, I can't wait for you to hear it.
That's just the recipe for a good song.
Oh,
like the
I mean, she is, yeah. She's so talented. Midnight Cowboy, I love, 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 love. This is a song I wrote with Ray, like nearly 2 years ago now. I was telling this story in an interview, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, but basically we wrote the song and we were like, oh my God, revolutionary, like we've changed the game. And then Beyonce brought out Renee, so I was like, fuck. And then we were like, oh, it doesn't matter, don't worry, because ours is about cowboys. And then Beyonce brought out Cowboy Carter, and I was like, fuck. So, yeah, I actually like, I've seen a few people be like, oh, this could go on the Renaissance album. I'm like, yeah, it could, and that's the best compliment ever. Mm-hmm. So very happy about that. But yeah, we wrote it a couple of years ago, and it's always been a favourite of mine. And I didn't want to wait too long between the second single, and I think it shows another sort of flavour to the album. And it's going to be very fun to perform live.
Would you add dancers
to my shows?
Stage, yeah.
Oh, I mean, for me, the budget doesn't exist. So if it was up to me, like, there'd be a whole orchestra, there'd be
would you ever
30 dancers.
Make like your own musical, or would you take part in one?
Oh, I'd love to write a musical. I've got two drafts, actually, of musical ideas and very early, you know, starting points for musicals. One being a Geordie Northern one. So I'd love for that to happen. I did also write, like, this is years ago, I had a whole idea for like a Little Mix musical. But the logistics of that would be so difficult, getting approvals on all the songs and all that stuff. I'd love to do that. This is a good question. I know you're a vision board girly. What does the JT1 vision board look like? So I love Pinterest. Love me some Pinterest. There's a lot of... It's weird, actually, because it evolves. So originally, when I first started the project, there was a lot of, like 70s imagery. Like, trippy, like, mushrooms and all that stuff. I don't know. It's a certain era, obviously.
Like, more on the surreal side?
Yeah, very surreal, very unreal. I guess, yeah, surrealism is the right term. But as it evolved, I think as the music evolved, and I realised I was actually just telling more of my story, it became more important to me to like mix just like everyday life with this fantasy world, like I'm merging the two together. So the vision, like the mood board is, well, there was a lot of David LaChapelle on there. So that's pretty cool.
I manifested it.
I definitely did. I literally wrote a list of people I'd love to work with and he was on it. So yeah, but visuals wise, I have like a Jade tour folder because in my mind I'm doing a world tour. So there's a lot of visuals on that of like big, yeah, theatrical, like showbiz-esque, you know, the kind of old school theater. I'm a lot more drawn to like real life sets than like CGI or super techie stuff. If you're a OG fan, you'll know that I'm really bad with technology. So I didn't think it would be very realistic for me to come out with like something that was, I don't know, like green screened or super high tech. I'm definitely more drawn to real life set builds and that sort of thing. So I think my live show would emulate that. Yes, are you planning on going on tour? Yes, I am. Yeah. And yes, I will do everything I can to come here to do that. Yeah, please. If you stream my songs, then I'll get to come here. Which Little Mix song would be best friends with each song you've released this far? That's a good question. Angel's best friend from Little Mix, maybe Wasabi. Just because, you know, same team and similar kind of sucking it to him concept. Midnight Cowboy, maybe like Sweet Melody or Lightning, maybe something like that. And then Fantasy, I guess just because of the Motown feels, maybe a bit of like Love Me Like You would go quite well with that. So yeah, I enjoyed that question. That was a good one. How do you come up with song ideas? Does it come naturally or do you stick with the thought until it forms itself into a song? Yeah, it just depends. Like I say, I write poems or if I am going through anything at that time, then I definitely like writing about it. I've talked about this already, but there's a song on the album, which is about my mum she's got lupus and she was really poorly at the start of this year. And I think I really struggle to talk about how I'm feeling to people. Like I definitely like shrink and I hold it in and I struggle to express my emotions when I'm going through something. So the best way for me to do that is to write a song instead. So that's where that Unconditional came from. But it's kind of in my own way. It's not necessarily a sad song. It is lyrically, but it's still got that kind of, not dance element, but I don't know, you know, like Robin, I love Robin because I think she's the perfect artist to represent like happy, sad songs. Where you can like bop in the club to them, but then you listen to the lyrics, you're like, oh. So yeah, that song's kind of in that world. If each of your solo songs would be a smell, what would they be? I think Angel of My Dreams is just like fucking chaos, isn't it? So
like a dirty club at like
yeah,
5 a.m.
Yeah, dirty club. Like as you're walking in, it's like, okay, it's a bit of fresh air here. Then you fall down the stairs into the bar and then you're like, whoa. You're like, this is a mixture of like alcohol and urine. And sweaty people. Yeah, I guess the end of the song is when you finally get back out the club and you vomited a bit, but you're like gradually walking away from it. So yeah, Fantasy I think smells like blood. Oh yeah, good one. Nuts. Blood. Yes, it smells like blood and it smells like, I don't know, like it's quite twinkly as well. So maybe some sort of, I'm gonna say like Britney Spears Fantasy. Do you remember that? Love. And then Midnight Cowboy smells like sex. Kate. What can we expect from your new single? Well, the next single is, I would describe it as like just a big pop in your face banger. I feel like, you know, we've had the chaos of Angel. We've had the understatedness of Midnight. We've had the feel good vibes of Fantasy. And for this one, I just wanted it to be like, this is big pop moment. Big chorus, big vocals, telling a story again, dramatizing something minimal, which is a bit of me. It's kind of based off an argument that I've had in the past. And that's what the song is about.
Yeah. Is there a reason for the timing? How do you decide that, especially for releasing like the singles and
It's definitely purposeful. I think I like seeing what the reaction is for every different kind of song on the project. So I'm interested to see what the response will be from something that, I mean, I wouldn't even say this song is like straight down the line pop, because it's definitely still got a bit of that left feeling to it. I was going to say it should be easier because it's a pop song, but it's actually not, because the title's not friendly at all. So I've made it hard for myself again. I like challenging myself and I like going against the grain a little bit. But I'm really excited for the video. I'm literally shooting it this Friday. Yes. And it's like one location, two looks, wigs. That's all I'm saying. What made you choose Backbone for your Live Lounge cover? I just wanted to do something that literally nobody would expect me to do. Even my team and like some of my family and friends are like, what? Why are you doing that song? Not because it's not a great song, but I guess you can't, like, I like when you can't hear how I would do something. So then it gives me the opportunity to reinvent the song and make it my own. That's the goal, I think, with Live Lounge, is to take a song and make it sound like it should be on your album. So that was the vibe of Backbone. And it was really fun as well, getting to like rewrite the lyrics, make it more accustomed to me as a northerner and as someone that's Arab. So yeah, that was really cool to do, actually. And I knew from the off, I knew the minute I got asked to do Live Lounge, it was going to be that song, just because I already heard like the strings and using like the oud, which is like a beautiful Arabic instrument. Yeah, and I just could hear how I could reinvent it in my head. But I did, it was between Backbone or I had like a list of different songs. Hosier was on there, Too Sweet. But then I decided that he sings it so well that it's, it's really hard to do anything better than that. So at least with Backbone, it was totally different. But yeah, I knew I wanted to pick a male voice anyways. If you're okay with spilling some tea. Is there a concept for tour you've always wanted to do, maybe even during Little Mix, that you can imagine for your highly anticipated solo tour? Oh, good question. There was an idea with the girls that we really tried doing for one of the tours. I think it was for Glory Days or LM5. We wanted to do a huge boxing ring in the middle of the arena and all of us enter from different corners of the arena. And we were so hell-bent on that idea, but I guess because of like logistics or budgets or whatever. But I think it's interesting now, because I feel like when you look at boxing, boxing's suddenly become very theatrical, hasn't it? Have you noticed? They do like whole trailers now before a fight. It's like very, they do like music videos. I'm like, okay. Okay, Tyson. So yeah, it's interesting that. But yeah, so we had that idea. Would I do that for myself? No. But I do think
like the different versions of yourself. Yeah, like,
imagine just, oh my god, that's
a cool
actually
video though.
Yeah, well I guess
like intro.
Yeah, there's a lot of Jades in the campaign, so that would be quite interesting.
Other?
Yeah. If there's just different
wigs
Jades
flying everywhere.
You just don't know which one's me. Oh, that's quite good actually.
I actually love that.
Yeah, I'm into that. I think for my shows, yeah, like I say, very theatrical. I actually really love that idea, so I'm gonna have a little tour about intro. And maybe have some sort of little Jade on stage would be really cool as well. Mm-hmm. What would be your drag name and who would you do at Snatch Game? my drag name. Well, I was named Shanida Nibbles by Willem. Which you may or may not know. Yes, because I always would carry a snack with me on a night out. I'd always have something in my bag in case I got peckish, which I think is very smart, actually. But me and Jordan, we actually played this game recently. I was like, what's a good name? Queen Laquifa is up there for me. Ariola Grande is a good one. The list is endless, really. I love a pun drag name. So that. And then Snatch Game, I think I would be, I guess I can do like maybe Shakira or like, Cher. A lot of people do Cher and do it well, don't they? I'm trying to think whose voices I can mimic. Maybe a bit of like Toni Braxton, something like that. Is there a lyric from one of your new songs that resonates with your current mindset? There's a song on the album which is about like my anxieties and stuff. And there's a lyric in there which says, what's the chorus? You're just a... Sick of you talking to me like I'm your bitch when I'm that bitch. Yeah, it's a line called "Sick of you talking to me like I'm your bitch when I'm that bitch." But it's actually just me singing to myself, like getting in my own head, which I sometimes do. I'm sure everyone's been there where you kind of have a bit of imposter syndrome. So that song is basically me like having a go at myself, like stop it. Stop doing that to yourself. So yeah, that's something that resonates with me at the minute. Because, you know, we're all human. I have moments of feeling a bit vulnerable or, oh my God, like, is this what I'm meant to be doing? Like, do I deserve to be doing this? And I have to remind myself that, yes, I do. What's your personal biggest achievement in your solo career and what is it while in the LM era? My personal biggest achievement going solo is... I guess just having the balls to do what I want. Like, I feel like that's an achievement. I've really not listened to like outside voices, which, you know, is sometimes a good thing. But especially for my first single, I think being brave enough to put a song like that out is my biggest achievement because it's really helped like literally forge my career as a solo artist. It's opened so many doors for me. It's gained me a lot of new fans, so I'm really proud of myself for taking that risk. And then biggest achievement with LM, I don't know, was lasting like over a decade in a girl band. Like, that's crazy. Who can say they've done that? I literally don't think there are any other girl bands that have lasted for that long. It's really hard for girl bands, so when I see groups like Flow, I'm really proud of them because I know how hard they're having to work as a girl band and as women of colour to succeed. Yes, they're phenomenal and they deserve all their flowers. So, yeah. And then lastly, we have, which song by any other artist do you wish... Oh, you could have written yourself. I did this! Okay, well, I can think of one more. What did I say? Oh, yeah. No One Dies From Love. Me and the girls used to always say End of Time by Beyoncé. Because we just used to love that song so much. But if I was picking a Beyoncé song, it would be... have you heard of her song Heaven? That song makes me cry every time. I think it's really hard to... I actually do have a song about grief on the album, but writing a song about grief is really difficult to do. One, because it's just painful to write. But when I listen to Heaven by Beyoncé, I feel like it captures that feeling so perfectly. And it's almost positive, right? The lyrics are like, heaven couldn't wait for you, which is just like, oh my God. So yeah, I've also written a song about grief on the album. And I'll tell you a lyric actually while we're here, because I'm spilling tea left, right and centre, which is "Grief is glitter." Because when I was writing a song about losing someone, to me, grief does feel like glitter because you can't fucking get rid of it. It's like stuck everywhere, right? Months after, you're still finding it in the corners of your room or in your jacket or, you know, in the crevices. So that's what I like in grief too, in my own sort of fabulous way, because you can't really shift it, but it's always there. It just gets a bit easier. So, yeah. And on that note, thanks for coming. Thank you, everyone. Thank you so much. And thank you, Faye.
My pleasure.
Can we give it up for Faye, please? She's so thank incredible. You. I'm so grateful that you did this. And thank you for coming and being here. I really appreciate it. I love you dearly. And yeah, I can't wait to come back. So thank you. Angel of my dreams.
Der Jetzt Out Podcast ist eine Produktion von Podcast Network by Sony Music. Idee und Redaktion Sarah Heiß. Executive Producer Sarah Heiß, Lukas Barth und Sandra Pfeiffer. Audio und Video Jonathan Heffner, Lukas Barth und ich, Faye Montana. Und die Songs aus dem Podcast findet ihr auf der Jetzt Out Playlist. Und alle, die mich beim Talken sehen wollen, finden Videos zum Podcast bei Snapchat und TikTok. Und nicht vergessen, Jetzt Out überall zu folgen und zu abonnieren. Danke, bye!